CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning, the 1st of June, brand new month, level 3, brand new week. Lots of exciting things to get into today, and we will get to your ideas, your thoughts, your calls, your comments. 0797482090. Let us know what's going on. I got an email here, which I thought I'd share with you this morning. Hey, Gareth, I haven't contacted or messaged the show in a while. Only on rare occasions am I able to listen live because of time zone differences, but I always catch up in a day or two. So then they carry on saying, I couldn't help but empathize with you when you tried to explain your reasoning behind the open letter to Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma. You're so right about people throwing shade around when views are expressed. I agree with you that there is no harm in trying to understand NDZ as a person, or a gogo, as you aptly put it, who is trying her best to do whatever she can and whose fallibility seems to make her human like the rest of us. Thanks for sharing your views. Since you like disagreement, this is where the email gets interesting. I thought I'd tell you that I really cringed when you did the show on two different types of people during a crisis, as I believe humans are far more complex than that. It is understandable that people feel comfortable and see themselves as either one or the other, because it allows them to make sense of something which, during a time when there's so much uncertainty, is easy to do. Wanting to categorize people and things is a human trait that we are, as we are cognitive misers, after all. And we're also gifted with the ability to question and empathize and see many different points of view. So we should strive to do more. I agree with that, by the way. Listen, I'm very want to put people into boxes. I think it's what we all do. It is discerning. It's necessary as a human being to discern whether or not someone is advantageous or disadvantageous to you, right? That would make sense.
Gareth, before you go on, can you just unmute yourself on Google Hangouts?
Oh, you guys can't hear me? How embarrassing. Okay.
We go.
Sorry. Sia and Leanne were busy thinking this guy's rattling on and he's making no sense. Okay. So I don't know if it's just me, but we all like to categorize people, right? Let's not lose sight of the spirit of humanity, which we've spent so much time doing this year. Thanks to you, Siam, Bulelo, Mfundo, Leanne, and everyone else for giving your listeners amazing content, blah, 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 blah. So thank you very much. And then that's from Jay. Also says, we should start a new list for Mbulelo. It's the countries that Mbulelo has never been to list. And first
it'll be
on
a
that,
short list.
A very short list.
First like a long list.
First list that you haven't been to is Japan, right? You haven't been to Japan.
Japan, Iceland, okay. Norway.
All right. That's the only three. There we go. No.
Yeah, very short.
That's the end of that list, Jay.
I'm concise.
All right, so a couple of things that that are on the agenda for this morning. We've got Dr. Brett Lederle joining us later on. He's going to talk to us about getting ready for a slightly more normal working week, which is going to kick off for some people today. But Leanne found a story about how France has basically said to Twitter, because they're having a dispute with Donald Trump at the moment, if they want to move to France, they're welcome to come and make their home there, right?
Yeah, the French junior digital affairs minister, Cédric
You've got to say it right, it's Cédric
Cédric said, we would welcome Twitter moving to France. Because obviously they're going to be facing adverse operating environments in the US at the moment.
Shouldn't you say Twitter?
Twitter. Hamburger.
And he's minister.
What's his title? Junior?
He's the junior digital affairs minister. So I hope he's won by the rest of France.
Well, the rest of France probably doesn't know who the hell he is. I mean, that's a very junior person, the junior digital affairs minister. How many people do they have in their cabinet?
Does sound like that. But, I mean, as South Africa, I'd be like, come join us.
Yeah, I don't know that Twitter would last very long here.
No.
Why?
Probably not.
Well, because
what makes you say that?
Because as I've learnt by hard and personal experience, people in this country don't understand freedom of expression.
He lives in San Francisco. You think he wants to come to a place like South Africa, the most conservative place in the world? I don't think so.
One of the most conservative places
exactly.
in the world.
Yeah, would be a fun time for him.
But throughout all of a sudden, Mark Zuckerberg is being shared very widely on the internet in a whole lot of fake news.
Oh, yeah?
And that's since he publicly came out against fact-checking.
He came out?
See, I don't get excited. Against fact-checking by social media companies. So some of the fake news stories that have been going around, they're by two satirical websites with Australian domain names. The first article says, it's called, "Social Media Should Not Fact-Check Posts," says child molester Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh!
which also baselessly alleges that the CEO likes black jelly beans. Another article also posted says, "Mark Zuckerberg, dead at 36, says social media should not fact-check posts."
He doesn't strike me as someone with a great sense of humor, so I think these type of stories annoy him so much.
He's furious about this. He's like losing his mind.
Look, I think anyone being called a child molester would, but...
No, if you're not a child molester, then people calling you that's ridiculous.
Plus, he's an alien, so he doesn't care.
No. I mean, this is an important fact, right? It's like if someone calls you a homophobe, but you just are completely not homophobic. You've lived your life being totally accepting, tolerant, and loving of people who are homosexual. Why would someone call you a homophobe? Then being called a homophobe would be like me calling RuPaul a homophobe. It would be ridiculous, right?
Mm.
RuPaul wouldn't have to defend himself.
Sure, but the gays aren't really happy with RuPaul. So.
Oh, really? Why? What has RuPaul done to the gays? You see, I'm not in the loop. What happened? What happened?
RuPaul and his husband own a farm.
Yeah.
And they use that farm for fracking. And so he's now embroiled in that while the gays are going, oh my gosh, why are you taking part in it?
Because if you're gay, you have to be in support of all the same stuff as all the other gays. You couldn't possibly be for fracking, for example.
Yes.
It's just so weird. Like, why must everyone conform? Why is it so important to some people that everyone else conform to their point of view? Is a divergence of opinion such an off-putting thing to some people? That it makes
you know, a strong tribalism.
Yeah, but I can't be friends with you just because we disagree about fracking. Are you kidding me? Like, if those gays who are upset with RuPaul about fracking, if you sit them down and you say to them, listen, there are probably 100 things that we disagree on. Is that such a problem that you need to now hate RuPaul and stop watching his dumb show? Yes, totally. It's upsetting to me that someone would be pro-fracking. And it's such a funny thing that fracking is so close to fucking in terms of words.
I know. I've been wanting to say it.
I knew we were not mature enough to handle this.
But you know, like calling Mark Zuckerberg, who, as far as I know, is not anything near a pedophile, calling him that, I don't think he should be upset by that. I don't think it matters to him because it would be like me calling your mom, who's one of the nicest people in the world and who's never done anything embarrassing and has a record as clean as the driven snow, as pure as the driven snow. Imagine me calling her, your mom's a whore. I mean, like, it's just stupid. It's childish and it means nothing. If it's that far from the truth, no one should notice it.
In primary school, it mattered. Those your mama jokes, man.
That's right, but that's because you were at primary school. And the same goes here. You don't have to defend yourself against absolutely stupid stuff. In fact, if you do, it makes people think, I wonder why he's defending himself against that. Maybe there's some truth to it.
Yeah, he didn't defend himself against being dead.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have to come out on the internet and say, I'm not dead. Look, I'm still alive.
Or imagine the only thing he took offense to was the black jelly bean thing.
I like jelly beans of all colors. I'm not a jelly bean racist. And you see a lot of this on the internet now. You see people like defending themselves against stupid stuff that they don't need to defend themselves against. Nobody needs to say, you don't need to say that you think that the killing of George Floyd is an abomination. It is. The people who don't, it's amazing, but there aren't any that you can find on the internet. You're going to struggle to. But the people who come out and go, I am pro George Floyd's death, who says that? It's such a cheap position.
Yeah.
To say I'm against racism and Black Lives Matter. Of course they matter. Of course Black Lives Matter. That's not an expensive position to take. You're not risking any personal reputation when you say Black Lives Matter or I'm not a racist. Obviously, that's how you should be. That's what everyone should be. It shouldn't be required of you to say that, because it is a meaningless position in a country and a world and a civilized society like we're currently in. It should be obvious. I will take it for granted that most people think that the death of George Floyd is revolting and depraved and that humanity should be against it. And then you see all these, like you see some 16-year-old high school girl on Instagram going, George Floyd's death is an abomination. I'm like, well, yes, it's good. Good. You're a sensible person. Good. But she's like, she thinks this is a very powerful political statement she's making.
Mm. It's like saying, oh, the sun rose today.
What do you
today.
Think is the alternative?
Well, the alternative is to actually get behind causes that where it's not so easy for people to see the difference between right and wrong. Like, how about express yourself about fracking, like RuPaul had the balls to do? But that would require you to do some research. I'm pro-fracking. Explain. And then you'd have to be able to explain. I mean, if you say you're against racism, I mean, what a non-issue, really, because that should be the position of any sensible person. There's no cost.
Yeah.
There is no cost to you saying you are pro a non-racial position. That seems to me to be sensible. So that's good. It doesn't give me any information about you. It means you are as blank a slate as you were on the day we met you. And I don't think that it's necessary for everyone to have to say that they think the death of George Floyd is wrong.
Well, that presumes that you're saying the default position en masse, mm-hmm. globally, is that
yes.
racism is a bad idea. Now, yes. So you're telling me you presume that's correct?
I do presume it's correct to be a non-racist.
No, no, no. I'm saying you think the rest of the world thinks that.
No,
because
I would tell you very different from my experience.
But
I can't get into people's heads, Mbulelo. Neither can you. Neither can you. Nobody can. And that's why taking a position against this is unprovable. It's unprovable. Unless I'm going to go and research the whole world's subconscious and get them in a moment of honesty to admit that they might be a little bit racist. It is pure supposition on my part, and it is no more a well-researched supposition than if I just ask three of my friends. It's of anecdotal value only.
Hmm.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Not to me, but
not to you.
Okay.
Tell me why. Explain.
So my world is sport, for instance. Let's just give that and the constant abuse of Black players in Spain, in Italy, gets treated as just another day. Now, yes, that is only 100,000 people, but when the whole society isn't outraged, that tells you, oh, no, that's fine. Let's move on.
The society is outraged. Find me a person who's going to support that kind of behavior. And remember, you can have racist thoughts. No one knows. No one knows except you. But it is racist behavior that we should not tolerate. And
so
and when people,
the
when
monkey people, chants in a football stadium by 100,000 people.
Unacceptable. Those people are clearly demonstrating racist behavior. It's not acceptable. Totally unacceptable. And everyone should be against that. But to imagine that you have some window into someone's soul and you can tell whether they're a racist or not, that's a whole different story. Like if someone behaves in a racist way, That's gross. And those people should, I mean, you can't go to, then you're banned from football. If they catch you chanting that, they should ban you.
Quite the opposite. It carries on and flourishes. But okay, I take your position.
Behavior. We can only judge people by their behavior. You can't lock someone up. Like, Leanne might be thinking about murdering me right now.
How did you know?
With good reason, yeah.
So, but she can't lock me in jail, and she can't get the prosecutors to put me in jail, just because, or I can't get them to lock her up just for thinking that she might want to murder me. She has to actually demonstrate the behavior.
Yes, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, but that's also the law, right? Mm. I mean, no one in the world is saying that racism doesn't exist. Clearly, it does. It just seems to me to be an odd position to have to affirm that you're on the right side of this argument. It seems almost like thou dost protest too much. When someone puts out a statement on social media about how they are against racism, I'm like, well, good. But I assumed you would be anyway if you're a good person. That's all. It's just curious to see. So when
it's
you
like
see,
saying I'm against cannibalism.
Yes, right. I don't like it when people throw their babies in the river.
Yeah,
You know, I'm going to go on the internet today and I'm going to say, I think that if you have a child and you beat it every day, that's wrong. Now, who's going to disagree with me?
So are you saying like those fathers who are like, I look after my kids? Like no, just look after your kids. Why are you telling us? If you're a good person, get on with it.
Exactly. If you are a good father.
Exactly like that. Yeah.
You don't have to say that.
Yeah, get on with it. Yeah.
But do you think it's a fair comparison to make when you're in the thick of it? There isn't a big cannibalism
epidemic
debacle right now.
No, I agree.
So whatever your stance on it is different. And maybe I might be naive. I still believe in the good of people. I still believe people are trying to make their best or trying, you know, to do something with the best of intentions.
Yeah.
So even if it is as superficial or as minuscule as supporting a hashtag, but I think people are trying to just move everything forward.
Absolutely. And some people, that's the most they can do, right?
Yeah.
Whether it is in a capacity sense or whether it is in an intellect sense, I think everyone, well, I'd like to believe a lot of people right now are trying to just do the best they can. It's a weird situation. It is absolutely weird. In the people that I've been speaking to, I haven't been speaking to any Harvard professor. I haven't been speaking to anyone in the White House or the U.S. Capitol. But my peers and I are just so confused. And you're trying to make sense of the situation, but it doesn't make sense. Mm. And I think a lot more people are feeling that way, where it's like, well, damn, man, I don't want to get stuck into what the news is saying, but you can't help but you see these images and you get annoyed or you get sad.
Yeah,
and then
course.
You read about something and that triggers. I don't know. I think everyone is just trying to do their best and trying to make sense of the situation. So we aren't all going to be perfect. And what I've learned is progress isn't also a linear step forward.
Mm.
I think in order to achieve progress, we're going to take one step back and three steps to the left. But ultimately, we're all just trying to chug forward.
Well, it is weird that the mayor of either St. Paul or Minneapolis, I can't remember which one because they're twin cities, was on the news, and he said that all the people they arrested, every single one of the people they arrested during these protests / riots, was from out of state. That's odd.
What does that say to you?
I don't know, but it's very weird.
It would be like if there was a cannibal crisis in Joburg.
How is cannibal?
People from
Durban
were coming in and looting shops in Joburg.
Yeah, correct. It's just that there's a lot going on here that isn't immediately obvious. So, and we're also, by the way, also, let's not count out the factor that we're going through an unprecedented global crisis with COVID at the moment. So people's tempers and their nerves are on edge.
I was going to say, you know, you're a historian and a buff. Is the dictators of the previous century all happened because the social conditions were correct for tyranny to arise. So it's not a coincidence that Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini and these people happened in around the same time. Yeah. The social conditions were there in order for madness to you know, ensue. Lend itself to that. Yeah. And soon
I do agree with Sia, though, that there's a lot of confusion, and that's part of the problem here. And the way people are feeling about this is very different to whether or not the facts display themselves congruently in the same way. I also think, like, it's interesting. Someone told me that almost all the revolutions that have happened, that they've been able to gather statistical data on, the tipping point for a revolution usually occurs when people are spending more than 40% of their income on food. In other words, when there is poverty to the degree that people have to spend almost half their money just to feed themselves. At that point, usually, there are revolutions. So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. The statisticians will tell you that that's measurably how you can tell whether a revolution is going to take place. But what's going on in America is ugly, and it's no doubt due to some deep-seated stuff. But there are some very peculiar things happening too. Like, why are all these arrested people from out of state? That's strange. And that's not from me. That's from the mayor of Minneapolis or St. Paul, one of the two. So go and look it up. You could tell me what you think it comes from, because I'd be curious to know. All right, we've got to move on to some other things, because there are obviously lots of changes that are going to happen because of what's going on. Sports has been put on hold in Bolelo, and this is something you really care about. But Leanne has got a list of the world's 10 highest paid athletes for 2020.
Yeah, it's just been released.
Okay, so let's have a look at that, because maybe it'll tell us how COVID's changed things.
Just been released by Forbes. Obviously, there are a lot of people who aren't playing sport at the moment, and there's been a huge dent in some sports people's earnings.
Oh, yeah.
But these sports people are unlikely to be applying for a relief fund anytime soon. In 10th place, Carson Wentz. This is an NFL player, 27 years old, and he's worth $128 million.
And that's amazing, because they haven't really played that much this year, right?
Exactly. Another NFL player in 9th place, Kirk Cousins, at $60.5 million.
Okay. He's the Minnesota quarterback, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Minnesota. In 8th place, Tiger Woods, at $62.3 million. In 7th place, Kevin Durant. He's with the NBA, an Amurgo. In 6th place, Stephen Curry, also NBA. So this is the place to be, baby. 4th place, Neymar, $95.5 million.
Yeah, he's a yummy little thing.
He's a yummy little thing. Very nice tattoos. Even yummier is Lionel Messi. He's in 3rd place at $104 million. Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh, gosh.
Why are you laughing at him?
Because a lot of people who love Messi are likely to hate Ronaldo. Yeah. There they are against each other, next to each other in this list. Cristiano Ronaldo with $105 million.
So just a little bit more than Messi. Their competition is like sky high.
Yeah, absolutely. And the number one, any guesses?
I know it, so. Is this a current sports player?
Yes, this has just been released.
Hmm. No, I don't know.
South African.
Oh, I think it's someone in tennis.
No, South African born. South African born with the most Afrikaans-sounding mother in the world.
Okay, yeah, you're all right.
So, tennis player.
Is it a tennis player?
Yes.
Is it a man?
Federer, man.
Who's from Switzerland? Well, yeah, who's Swiss by
passport. I couldn't even get that right in a sports conversation. This is so sad.
If anybody needs someone to be on their team for a general knowledge quiz, do not ask Sia if you're looking for a sports person.
Right? Yeah, 6'4", 6'2", 6'love for Roger Federer.
He's worth $106.3 million. He actually became the world's highest paid athlete for the first time this year. And that's thanks to a diverse portfolio of lucrative endorsement deals. For instance, the Japanese apparel brand Uniqlo Security Services in 2018 under a 10-year, $300 million deal. But what's really nice is that the Roger Federer Foundation has raised more than $50 million and educated 1.5 million children in Africa since its launch.
Well, that is good.
Giving back, doing
some good work. All right.
And Mulelo, what's the deal with his mother?
South African. Sounds like she could be from Potensi.
So, I mean, listen, I know that we can't claim these people because they don't consider themselves South African. So Roger Federer is the most, the best, the most successful sportsman in the world just by numbers in terms of money, right, at the moment?
Yeah.
And we had Elon Musk launching his SpaceX rocket over the weekend. And we know he was born in this country and went to school here. And he doesn't claim to be South African anymore. But you know what? There's a link. So that's something to feel good about this
Yeah, morning. Absolutely. It's South African blood, man.
Yeah. But in order to be a really successful South African, you've got to get the hell out of here at some point.
That's what it seems like, as far as space, actually.
That's what you need to do. So how's
that? That's an uncomfortable realization.
All right, Michelle says, and this is a very important question, Leanne and Sia, did you watch The Bachelor? I got sucked in, and I just wanted to hear what you think.
We're talking about the South
African Bachelor,
right?
The finale was last Thursday.
Okay, so I still have to catch up. I'm like a few behind.
Now, are they
so
doing
I don't
it,
know the results.
Are they doing it on like Zoom?
No. It was recorded many moons ago.
Oh.
Remember that they spend like 30 days in total with each other. So they finished filming everything ages ago.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah,
I suppose technically if they started filming and then lockdown happened, they could have continued because they're kind of in isolation anyway. They're all just kissing each other.
The girls were just in that house, right?
Huh.
Yeah, that's right.
But then the bachelor's roving around. He might have picked up COVID and brought it into the house. Can you imagine that?
No.
I wonder if there are any Big Brother franchises that are still filming right now.
Yeah, because if they were there and it happened,
they're
probably the least at risk because there doesn't even need to be crew inside.
Actually, at this point, I would rather sign up for Big Brother.
Yeah.
Screw it, you'll see me shower, but oh well.
Imagine they weren't even told and they emerged later into this completely different world of COVID.
Well, I remember, yeah, a couple of months ago, we covered, I think it was Big Brother Germany. They were halfway through their season and they had to tell their contestants about it. But clearly, yeah, I suppose they should be all out by now.
Well, Gucho wants to say that she is very disappointed that we didn't cover The Bachelor this year. I'm sorry.
Listen,
I've made notes. I've still got notes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, then give us some notes. Let's hear what you thought. Have you got some of those girls who you like? Are there, you know, I honestly don't know who The Bachelor is, frankly. I don't think I know who The Bachelor is.
Mark.
I feel like they might have.
Oh, it hasn't changed the price of your bread.
No.
No, but they feel like they might have listened to us from last time because he's very well spoken.
Mm-hmm.
The competing ladies, most of them are of very high quality.
Oh, really?
I won't spoil it because it's still, you can still watch it from episode one. So one is a soldier and one is a lawyer. Another is a human rights lawyer. Another is a Cape Townian ethical vegan, adopt, don't home activist.
Imagine how complicated meal times with her are. I'm so afraid of taking a girl out on a dinner date and she's a vegan.
Why?
Because it's going to be, it's like going to dinner with you. You're impossible. Everything on the menu is a problem. You want French toast, but then you don't want them to use the white of the egg. And, you know, you'll ask for salt, but the pink Himalayan one, because the other one makes you sneeze. And then you'll want your beans, but you don't want them. You don't want them boiled. You want them fried. There's always a complication with you. And we've had a lot of meals together. I've never seen you just go, the number four on the menu is good for me.
Gareth, look at me. happy and in a successful relationship. Sure. I'm celebrating 10 years of marriage. Yeah, of that course. Should tell you more than enough.
That's exactly my point. Very complicated human being. But we wouldn't have you any other way, Sia. We wouldn't have you any other way.
No, I'll date that Cape Town vegan.
All right, so many things going on. Today, of course, means that many people will be heading back into the workforce after the countrywide lockdown goes to level 3. And you might need a little bit of a pep talk before you do. So if you are feeling that way, you might want to listen to our next guest. It's Dr. Brett Lederle. He is a chiropractor, a health and wellness coach, and he's also someone who can talk about human potential and help us all to live conscious lives in realizing our dreams. So I thought Monday morning you probably need a little uplifting advice and useful information. So we thought we'd get Brett in. So how are you, Brett? Nice to see you.
Morning, Gareth. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Are you having exactly the start to the month of June that you had prepared? None of us are.
My children aren't in grade 7, but grade 6, so we're next in line. But this whole uncertainty is a bit odd, but a good start to the morning, fresh morning here, and yes, I'm ready to rock and roll for the month.
Excellent. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the way you see things unfolding, because we're all a little bit nervous about what the future holds. Obviously, this pandemic, the lockdown, everything else that's going on around us makes many of us feel very uncertain. So how do we calm our nerves and how do we get our brains right to get back into productivity, to start taking back control of our own lives? You know, it's almost as if we've had a new parent in the form of government, in the form of these lockdown regulations come into our lives. And we now have to stand on our own two feet and occupy a position in society again.
It's quite a tough one, Gareth. There are two aspects to that from a stress point of view. Everybody's in stress at the moment. So it's very difficult to have a look at from a short-term perspective. I believe the conversation doesn't necessarily need to be just about now. The conversation actually needs to be about 5 or 10 years ago in terms of building our resilience. I mean, you will probably know the old adage about when is the best time to plant a tree. Mm. It's not now, it's 20 years ago. The next best time is obviously now. So in order for us to deal with things now, it's very difficult to have a quick solution to that. But having a look at a body, mind, and spirit sort of aspect, we need to be having a look at building our own resilience. And it's different for every person. When I do my coaching, it's very specific for each person. Some people like puzzles. Some people like hitting the bottle. Some people like going on walks and in nature. So that's why it's very difficult to cookie cut everything. But the greatest thing for me now is to get people to do as much as they can of things that they love. Mm. And I'm not saying things that they like, but it's things that they love. You know, the brain has two aspects to it. I mean, you can cut everything in the world down into cutting things into two different groups. But with the brain, we've got the fight, flight, fright response, which is the defense physiology that we have.
Right.
And then we've got the other part, which is where are we looking to thrive? So the brain and the body can't be in defense physiology at the same time as growth. So we've got to do things that we know get our body and our mind into growth. So that's doing things that we love. But there's also things that take us away from the stress. Having a look at, it's going to sound very cheesy and very it's a common thing that people talk about, but doing gratitude lists, giving ourselves things to be thankful for, and I'm usually talking about things that money can't buy.
Yeah.
And to be doing these things on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis to build ourselves into the state and into the condition that when these sorts of things do happen, that we are already in that state. You know, it's very easy. Like today I did a few processes to prepare myself for this, having a chat with you. But most of the times, you know, we don't know when the stress or when the stressful situation or event is going to happen, that stressful phone call. So we need to do our best to prepare ourselves that we're in that state pretty much all the time, so that whenever things go down, that we're already in the state and are prepared as best as we can to handle things.
I think that's such useful advice. First of all, I mean, the idea of being a little bit grateful about those things that, that you do take for granted and that many of us don't even realize we have, that, that make us resilient. And then the idea of doing something that you love, even if it's silly, you know, other people might think it is silly, but to you it's massively meaningful. And that could be, it could be, you know, writing, it could be going out for a walk, as you said, and it might just be, if it's meaningful to you and if it's something you love, it might just be having a drink. And up to now, that wasn't possible for some people. So there's an easy solution for those people right now.
So let me just be clear. It's not something I'm advocating at all.
No, of course not.
But there is...
No. Leanne, did you hear that? We got orders from a doctor.
No, I'm sorry. The line is breaking up.
So
Leanne is like going to elbow people out of the way at the liquor store going, doctor's orders.
So Brett, this is an area where like two of the different things that make you interesting overlap into Bulelo's life, because he was telling me that he actually had a friend of his who's a chiropractor come around over the weekend, and he's been exercising hard during the lockdown, which is one of the things he loves. And he said just to get his, you know, his spine aligned and to get his back sorted out was something that he was really excited about. Did I paraphrase that right, Bulelo, that you did this over the weekend?
Yeah, and I think I actually felt good this morning exercising instead of everything hurting, which means I can go harder, you know. So, and then it amplifies my enjoyment of what I love. So probably something Brett can elaborate on.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, one of the interesting things is people are highly, highly stressed at the moment. And one of the things that you find with any proprioceptive sort of thing, so when you get the body moving, the joints moving, it has a tendency to stimulate dopamine and serotonin. Now, dopamine is the feel-good drug and usually what the brain will secrete by itself, but it's what happens when we really feel good about ourselves. And then serotonin is the posture drug that makes us stand up tall and proud and feel that we are safe in the world. One of the things with chiropractic care is the large effect that it has on the brain. Everyone thinks that it's a purely mechanical process that is specifically for back and neck pain. And yes, it's very effective in treating back and neck pain. Mm-hmm. But there are other effects with regarding removing pressure on the nervous system, allowing the nervous system to function optimally, allowing the brain to have better communication through the nervous system. And obviously the nervous system is the master control system of the body. So you'll have a large effect on dopamine release. It actually has an effect on changing stress and anxiety. And there's great research coming out of Australia that shows that adjusting the spine can have an effect in improving brain function by up to 20%.
Wow.
And this is actually, yeah, I mean, this is 20% no small feat. I mean, who now can't deal with a little bit more brain function? And it's the prefrontal cortex. So it's the part of the brain that has a look at the future and seeing that the future is okay and planning and executive function and making decisions and doing things in difficult situations. So it's really, really important for us to make sure that the nervous system is optimized and so that the brain is working properly. And that's how I actually got into the corporate side of things, by having a look at who would actually want to enhance brain function. Now, obviously, we all would, if you want to be a great mom, if you want to be a great dad, a great sportsman.
Yeah.
But also making difficult decisions is all about making sure that you're in the right state and the brain is working in the right condition so that you can show up in the world in the best and most productive way that you can.
I've never left a doctor's office before, as I have with a chiropractor, feeling sometimes like I feel like I can walk on, like I'm walking on air, just feels amazing. Other times I bawl my eyes out for a good hour afterwards. And I think that's got something to do with, I stand to be corrected, but with holding emotions in your body. In particular, with me, it's my glutes. If I have my glutes worked on, I end up bawling my eyes out. But it's such a great release.
Wow. Well, it's interesting.
Aren't your glutes your ass? I mean, that's so ironic.
Yeah, I was trying to be more medical and less childish,
Leanne holds all her emotions in her ass. That's all we need
boom,
to know.
Diddy, boom, boom.
So, yes, it's very difficult to have a look at some really convincing evidence as to how that works. But a lot of the times we hold tension through our nervous system. And if you release that, it just allows that to release. I find it very common that people are crying on the table, and it's not out of pain, obviously. It's out of a release of pent-up energy. I mean, I don't have the research behind it, but also that lightness that you feel, that's dopamine.
Yeah.
See, but I've got to get me some of that in tablet form.
Doc, what about, you know, what Mbulelo just kind of breezed past, but it's a big deal. It's like maintaining yourself. And during this time, whether it's going for a visit to the chiropractor or the physio, if that's what you're into, or to even go to the hairdresser, for some people that's a similar thing. You know, it's just kind of looking after your body and your appearance, and kind of having a sense of purpose and pride. And for many people, that's been missing during this lockdown. Do you have any advice for people about how to get back into that and not jump into it too fast, or make a decision that, you know, could have counterproductive results?
Well, there's so many things, Gareth. And once again, like you say, it's whatever it is that you know works for you. So from a chiropractic point of view, I get adjusted between once a week and once a month. It enhances my function. It switches my brain on. I feel alive. I think most drug addictions or sex addiction or gambling addiction, whatever it is because of the lack of dopamine that we get, and we don't have enough adventure in our life.
Yeah.
So one of the things, yes, is to maintain function of the spine. That's one of the things. And the reason I've gone into wellness is I found that a lot of my patients, I was working on their spine, but they weren't eating properly. They weren't exercising responsibly. And I found that chiropractic is a very powerful lifestyle if you can apply it. But it's not the one-stop shop and the magic bullet. But the maintenance you talk about, yes, maintain your exercise, move, maintain a good, healthy, responsible diet, maintain your mind, doing things you love and looking after your mind. And then one of the things that a lot of people also negate is how important it is to regenerate with good quality sleep. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I mean, you'll find – so one of the things I know that what works for me – Gavin Hunt, I was working with Gavin Hunt, and one of the things he's the coach for Bidvest, but one of the things he said is, from a retirement point of view, the last thing you want to do is wake up in the morning, see that you're dressed, your hair's combed, you do certain things. So even when I'm doing an interview, I brush my teeth.
Yeah.
So I even make sure that I am in that feeling that I'm smartly dressed. I feel like a professional for productivity, for performance. As a sportsman, there's visualization. As a mom, you know, mothers have these huge responsibilities that are often trivialized. So whatever it is that you're doing to get up and take yourself seriously, maintain your brain, maintain your body, maintain your spirit. These are very, very important things to make sure that you're showing up in the world and you're a producer, not a consumer. So your existence in the world can then make the world a better place.
That's really motivating, especially during lockdown. I mean, I find that in the past, I wouldn't be able to have a work conversation on the phone if I wasn't wearing a bra. And now I go to the shops without wearing one. And it's that whole thing about just your self pride and keeping up your you know, maintaining your self pride throughout lockdown, not putting your slippers on first thing, and perhaps wearing a bra.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we lost a small amount of what you were saying there, Dr. Brett, but I think that the gist of it is very important, of what you said at the end about how you need to be a producer and not just a consumer. I mean, there are many people coming out of lockdown now, and they had all kinds of hopes and ambitions about coming out with this amazing body, and they would feel better, and they would have got their diet right, and they finally would have got into an exercise routine because they would have been at home and had the time. And for many people, the disappointment of 10 weeks of lockdown and things might be the same or worse as when you went in is almost too much to bear, right?
Well, it's true. The thing is, I'll be quite honest, it's hard. You know, the lifestyle, the four cornerstones that I've spoke about are simple. Everybody knows, eat more vegetables, exercise, look after your mind, don't stress, and then get good quality sleep. But to get it right, yep, it's difficult. So the whole thing is, people think that it's going to happen. I'll exercise when I have time. So it's got to be clearly constructed, and the philosophy behind it is so strong that we need to build a belief system around why we do things. Because I don't believe in laziness. I just believe people prioritize things better. People like burgers more than they like six packs.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes. And there's short-term solutions. I know a while ago you interviewed Jordan Peterson. It was fantastic. But one of the things he says is to not do things in the short term, but rather to have a look at things that are more meaningful. Now, I'm paraphrasing there, but he spoke about it'll take me a while to come up, but not to do things in the short term, quick fixes. It's to rather have a look at the medium to long term.
You know, you raise Jordan Peterson. I remember in his last book, and you know, for some people, he's kind of become the guru and the life coach that he wouldn't have described himself as at the beginning. But he says things like, you know, do the things that you can do to change your world. And this is kind of more important for most people to realize than the big stuff, because we do have big problems in the world, you know, big problems that are insurmountable for one individual to be able to change significantly. But you can change the little things in your life. You can eat more vegetables. You can make your bed. You can put on a bra in the morning. You can brush your hair. You know, you can brush your teeth. There are things that you can do, little things that don't feel like a big deal. They feel like those mundane routines once you get into them sometimes. But if you don't do them, you really start to slide backwards very quickly. And if you don't get out of bed and then make it, or if you don't tidy up your environment, you don't make sure that you are adding value to the world in small ways, then really your life becomes very meaningless to you. And it starts to spill over, and you start having some antisocial behaviors.
So exactly like you said, don't get up and put your gown and your slippers on. My son is a budding young writer, so he got up and he put his grandfather gown on and slippers on, and I was very reluctant. And he's 12. One of the things I wanted to do, a patient of mine said, why don't you get him a pipe? I'm like, no. but exactly like you're saying, Gareth, get up, do the small things. Make your bed, tidy your room,
yeah,
do the dishes, get dressed. Because, you know, if people think, like, I want to change the world, it's this huge, like, does the world, can we change the world? Like, rather change your world. The Buddhists are very clear that you must only deal with what's on your plate.
Hmm.
So if you get, like, what's the expression, besides charity begins at home, get your house in order.
Right.
I mean, there's a biblical quote that'll go with that, but that means, like, sort your own stuff out. Don't go out and change the world until you think that you are sorted out.
Well, this is it. I mean, like, we're sitting in a situation now with this pandemic, with the lockdown, with these race wars that are brewing in America, with Elon Musk firing a rocket into space that, you know, ultimately the goal is there to get us to Mars one day. These are big things to solve. These are big issues that, you know, Gareth, Leanne, Mbulelo, Sia, and Brett are not going to solve today. We're not going to be the people who suddenly come up with the big solution. And we may go on social media and say that we occupy this position or that position. Frankly, unless you have all of the things in your own life in order, for you to even comment on that stuff is just a bridge too far for most of us. Rather just focus on what you can do, right?
Well, I agree. I mean, there are these people that need to pull us further. There are guys that do these ultra triathlons, and from a body point of view, it's not something that I suggest doing. It's damaging. But we need these people to be showing us the potential of the human spirit. So we need those guys to be trekking to the North Pole. People give their lives for these crazy adventures, and that's fine. But for everyday Joe, like I'm going to take myself, I'm going to deal with what's in my small sphere of influence, and I'm going to make sure that I show up in a powerful way in these small little things.
Well, Leanne is planning to do some powerful things after the show this morning. She's going to go to the bottle store, which she's been waiting to do for 10 weeks, and it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this is live and that you're not going to quote me by saying hitting the bottle is a good sign.
I just wanted to ask you, through your research, having dealt with your clients, why do you think it is that people know what it takes to have a quality life, right, that they can control, but they don't do it? It's something that's very interesting to me that I observe around, because I'm trying to strive to that on a personal level.
Yeah, so, good question.
So the short answer is, I don't know. I've been studying this for 20 years. Why do people smoke when they know it kills them? And I'm not saying that I'm immune to this, that I'm this perfect angel. I've got an issue with sugar, and I've got to be very careful. So I don't actually know. But the more I go into it, there are various reasons. And interestingly enough, Jordan Peterson has helped me a lot with this, but still I don't feel clear on the answer. Where he thinks we know we're fallible. We're these weak people, and we know that if we're weak and we can die like this, how are we going to look after ourselves and respect ourselves? So there's one deep, I mean, this is a deep, dark, murky water you're going into. And then there's a group of scientists that say that we have four beliefs that stop us from doing what we do. Number one, we don't think it's going to happen to us, thinking of disease down the line.
Yeah.
There's a belief that if we do get it, that these doctors are just going to give us one magic pill and we can carry on behaving irresponsibly with our lifestyle. So that's two. The third one is we think that, well, it's not worth it. All of this hard work to be eating well and doing all of this and exercising and meditating and sleeping on time, that it's not actually worth it, that we're going to get hit by a bus down the road, like that sort of adage. And then the fourth is that people believe that there's a barrier to health and healing, like it's expensive and I don't have time and it's hard. So some of these are true. So it's very hard to debunk these myths because they are ingrained in our society, and the medical fraternity has done a phenomenal job in making people believe that they can carry on doing what they do and they just need to take this magic pill and they're going to be able to be healthy through medication.
That's such an interesting breakdown you've just given us. I mean, like those four things that you just went through, I sometimes find myself cycling through all four. Like I'll go, you know what? I can eat this because they'll discover a cure for being fat, or they'll find some way to get rid of, some cardiac problem that I might have as a result of that one day. Number two, I'll go, it's not worth it. Life's too short anyway. I may as well enjoy myself. And then I'll go to the, something's going to get me anyway part of it. It's just what you just broke down there is such an interesting way of looking at why people don't get to do the things that they should be doing. And Mbulelo's right. Like, it's so much easier to just go, well, I know that this stuff is bad for me. I know that this isn't the best thing to do, but screw it. I'm going to do it anyway.
So, Gareth, you're right. And, you know, these are the psychological reasons why we do that. But still, I've got to rock up today at work, and I've got patients lined up that I've got to now debunk these myths and train them and teach them and try and get them to change beliefs that have been with us for centuries. Now, Humbulela, one of the things that we look at is helping people believe in themselves so that they can start to turn that around. But Gareth, you're also talking about a triangle that happens in our mind and our brain so quickly about the victim, the perpetrator, I can't remember the other side, where you go through it like, oh, life is so hard. Oh, let me just have the chocolate.
Like, or
let
me just woe is me, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you have it, and then you on your case, and you're like, oh, geez, I'm so weak and so useless. Oh, but it's too late now. So you go through this cycle almost instantaneously, where you beat yourself up, and then you're the victim, like, oh, and then you like, but it's okay, Brett, like, you've worked so hard, so it's okay, so just give yourself a break. And this happens again and again and again instantaneously, even with a packet of chips.
Yeah.
All three of those parts of us come up.
Yeah. Wow, interesting stuff. No, this is really important and helpful. And I think, if anything, people are going to start their week off with all of those ideas in their head. And hopefully, by the time we get ourselves into a new routine and a new pattern, we are able to integrate the better behaviors and lose some of the worse ones. But I think, Brett, really, it's been terrific talking to you. So thank you very much for spending some time with us. And if you want to know more about Dr. Brett, where can we find you on social media? Can we find you on a website or something?
So you can find me on social media at Brett Lederle. That's LEDERLE. Or you can have a look at Dr. Brett. That's DRBRETT.co.za.
Awesome stuff.
To me, the surname looked French, and in my mind, I saw it as Lederle.
Lederle, but it's actually German. It's Lederle.
Okay. Ah, right.
Very good. All right, Brett. Well, thanks again, man. This has really been helpful. I thought, sometimes when we do these things, you talk a little bit too much about the spiritual stuff, and sometimes you talk a bit too much about the medical side of things. And this has been a nice overlap between the two. So I've really appreciated having your point of view on the show. And good luck to you for the week.
Great. Thanks very much for having me, and all the best, team.
Are you able to practice as a chiropractor normally now? What's the story?
So when there was hard lockdown, we were told that we were essential, and then our association said that we needed to be only emergency care, so we saw very, very limited patients. And then at level 4, we were allowed to open with very strict guidelines, with all the clean rules and everything like that. But right now, yes, we can practice as long as we're doing all of the cleaning and all the protocols that are in place.
Right.
But people are still quite scared.
Yeah, we found out on Friday what we've got to do to sort of sanitize the place and what the rules are, and you've got to check people's temperatures and all kinds of stuff. So that's what we're going to start doing today as well. All right, good luck, everybody. It's level 3, whatever that means, and I hope that that for you it's a successful week. We will catch up with you tomorrow morning, bright and early, at 6 in the morning. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Brett Lederle, and thank you to you for joining us. You can always get hold of us on 0797482090. You can email me, gareth@cliffcentral.com. We'd like to hear from you. Have an awesome day.
Cliffcentral.com.